Welcome to an episode of Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where a trainer and trainee talk about herbal medicine and fitness.
We're your hosts. My name is Danielle Kreese, and I'm a certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. And we also have Paula Kirsch, who's an artisanal herbalist and owner of Botanically Curious. So let's go ahead and start the show.
Welcome back to another episode of Bands and Botanicals. And today we are going to be talking about ancient herbs and tarot with our special guest, Lavender Moon. Hello.
Hello.
So we are all obviously still socially distancing and being from different areas. We have our guest on Zoom, and Danielle's actually on Zoom today. So we're all distanced. Lavender Moon is the host of Herbal Witchery Podcast. So if you guys haven't checked that out yet, I urge you to do so. It's really, really informative and fun in a good format. And she's also the owner of Lavender Moon Enchanted Herbal Teas. And much like myself, as a pagan, she has become inspired to learn more about the history of herbs and how they are associated in different energetic properties, especially in the pagan and witchcraft community. And she has a background in English literature and enjoys tarot reading and cooking in her free time. So hello.
Hello. How are you guys today?
Good.
We're great. Excited for this conversation. I remember the first time I listened to your podcast, I'm super new to herbalism, and I appreciated everything that you said in your podcast. And I immediately messaged Paula, and I was like, I want to get this girl on. And she was already familiar with your podcast. So we're just so excited to have you here.
Thank you. It's amazing to hear that, because when I started it, I was like, nobody's going to want to listen to this. It's just, you know, me talking about these boring old herbs. But yeah, it seems like there are people that really enjoy it. So I love that.
Well, it's good to hear that you have that you went through that journey, I guess, because I don't know if I could speak for both of us, but at least for me, sometimes in the back of my head, I'm just like, oh my God, we're starting this podcast, and is it even reaching anyone? And you hope that it does, and you know that it'll reach the right people, but it's always good to hear someone went through the same kind of battle of emotions when getting into this endeavor.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Paula, what's the botanical card you picked for us today?
Yeah, so like every episode, we're going to start off with our botanical oracle cards. And today we have selected wild garlic, which is pretty interesting because I think we were talking about garlic on another podcast with another guest. But garlic is a popular treat for bears and wild boars and other creatures. And then obviously humans have been enthusiastically eating garlic for millennia. So interestingly enough, it's an ancient herb within itself. But garlic leaves can be added to salads and soups and used as just savory herbs. And the stems could actually be salted or pickled if you're looking to preserve them. But most often, the bulb of the plant is used in a variety of dishes. So bear's garlic or wild garlic is grown around the same time of the year, April through June, as bluebell and lily of the valley. So if you're out there foraging in the wild, make sure you know what you're actually looking for, because wild garlic can be misconstrued as lily of the valley. And that's important because lily of the valley is toxic. So you do not want to be consuming that. And as I mentioned, all of the aspects of garlic are edible. And so that's why the oracle property for today is service. So when we talk about service, what we're actually talking about is service to others, like volunteering, getting a cup of coffee for someone, going that extra mile just to make sure that their day is maybe a little bit easier, because we often focus on how remarkable or special or noteworthy we have to be, when the worthwhile aspects of what we do is as simple as just lending a hand or having a kind word to someone. And sometimes that's exactly what we need.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It seems especially these days, those small gestures can be such a big thing. And I know that you mentioned that Lavender Moon was doing her teas, and she has these podcasts. in which she's providing. She has a tarot podcast and an herbalism podcast, if I'm not mistaken. And so you are providing a service to people and providing information. And I guess, like, to me, for the work that you and Paula do by providing these teas and these herbal remedies, you're kind of giving back people a sense of power, I guess, and a sense of connectivity. So to both of you, I'm thankful for your services in that regard.
Thank you. I would say the same thing about your guys' podcast, because whereas mine's more about the history of herbs, I think that you, Paula, talk more about, like, the actual medicinal uses. And Danielle, I know, like, I've been getting into, like, a good workout routine lately. It was before the new year, so it wasn't necessarily a resolution, but I really liked your episode where you talked about doing things at home and, like, using what you had around the house. So I think you guys do a service as well and help people with that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely.
So I hear you have some nice herbs you want to talk about.
Well, one of my favorite herbs, so you guys had asked me to kind of think about what were my favorite ones that I've talked about so far. And I guess I'll say for anybody who hasn't listened to Herbal Witchery, I try to keep it pretty short and the same format every week. And so I usually talk about, or I start with, like, a literature quote, because I said I had a literature background. And so I'll kind of set the mood with that. And then I'll talk about the name, the official Latin name of the herb. And I'll kind of go into, like, why was it named this? And then I'll talk about how it was used throughout history. And then I talk about the magical properties. And then I end with a recipe, usually. So one of my most favorite herbs is mugwort. And mugwort's, I think, a really interesting herb. And it's kind of controversial, maybe, in some circles, because of some of the properties that it has.
The herb and its properties in general. I was just wondering if what got you to the point where you did want to talk about, I know you said you had an English literature background, but kind of bringing into the historical aspect of things, did you find that was a niche that needed to be filled? Because, you know, I don't know. It's a different perspective to talk about the name and to hear it used in context, whether it's in a poem or a saying or something from the past. And I just thought that was a really interesting perspective to bring into the herbalism conversation. And I just wanted to know what kind of inspired you to do that, to take that route, before we get into the mugwort. Sorry, I totally took us off topic.
You're fine. In fact, I was thinking about that and I was like, okay, exactly how did I get into this podcast? Because I did just kind of fall into it. And I think the answer is that, you know, as a pagan, as a person who does believe that, like, things like spells or rituals, that they can help us set intentions and help us make changes in our lives, I would go, like, say I was going to do a spell to kind of, like, increase my income of money, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd go online and I'd look up a spell or intention or whatever to do. And I would see that I was supposed to use cinnamon and green tea or any number of herbs, and they were supposed to be for prosperity. That was their magical property. But I was like, why? Like, I don't understand.
Right.
All of these magical books will list all of these properties. And I was like, where does that come from? So that's kind of where it started, because I was like, I don't want to be using these things, not having any idea of the history behind them or why they're used for those purposes. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it started. And it's just kind of gone from there. I kind of, when I started, I was like, I am going to not find any information on these herbs, or it's just going to be boring. And I found the complete opposite. I found every single one of them, something surprises me. I find something very interesting about it. So yeah, it's kind of grown from that place. And then you kind of asked about the literature part as well. And I can't give you a straight answer on that. I just, maybe the first one, I kind of noticed that there were poems about different herbs. And I was like, I'm going to see if I can find one for every episode. And I have so far.
Nice.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we said maybe think about some herbs that you wanted to talk about. What drew you then to bring up mugwort? Especially because you mentioned that it was a little controversial. And I know that Paula has a bunch of information. We were just talking about mugwort, and I know that she was expressing some reasons why it could be controversial. So what brought you to bring mugwort into the conversation?
Yeah, I think it's because it's a little bit controversial, and it has this really like beautiful, mysterious history, even its name, which I can talk about in a minute. It's associated with like the night, moonlight, the goddess Artemis, which is also Diana. They're the same one. So the childbirth, fertility. And it is also an herb that if you smoke it or drink it in a tea, it doesn't get you high, but it can make you definitely like in that wavelength. But it also can be toxic if you like drink it every day, drink it in too high quantities, things like that. So it's kind of this really awesome herb that actually does what it's supposed to do, I guess. Mm. Because you'll find a lot of herbs, like the herbalists in like the 15th century and the 16th century, they would prescribe these herbs for certain things. And then we found out through the centuries with more scientific background, like, okay, this herb doesn't actually make you not blind anymore, right? Like some herbs don't actually do what they said that they did. But mugwort was used for like flying ointments and things like that. And so it actually does do what a lot of the folklore spoke to. So that's kind of what drew me to this one.
Well, I'm excited to just hear a little bit more about it in the format that you usually have for your podcast. Because like I said before, you know, having that English literature background in the way you talk about it, there's some kind of romanticism around the herb that we just don't touch on in our podcast, and that's why we really wanted to bring you on.
I definitely see what you mean. Like, that's why I said I love that you guys do kind of like the medicinal part. And then yes, mine is very much rooted in the folklore and kind of the past beliefs, which were sometimes romantic and sometimes not reliable, but sometimes they were. So well, I mean, I can jump into that. So like I said, the Latin name is Artemisia vulgaris, which vulgaris doesn't sound very pretty, but it just means like it's the common kind. And then Artemisia refers to Artemis, the Greek goddess of the moon. So again, this plant is associated with nighttime. So there's mystery there. There's romanticism there. And then that goddess was associated with feminine, like I said, childbirth, feminine issues, menstruation, and things like that. And so what's really interesting, and I think, Paula, you'll probably talk about this because it is like a medicinal part of it, but mugwort was used like throughout the centuries to help women like restart their menstruation if they were unable to menstruate. And I don't know if I need a trigger warning for this, but it was also used as an abortificant. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. Right. So in a way that's powerful because women didn't have that choice back then, but they could go to herbs for things like that. And so mugwort was used in that way.
Yeah, I love that because and that's also just a warning to anybody who's interested in this herb. If you're trying to conceive, if you're pregnant, if you're lactating, this is not an herb for you because it does cause a lot of contraction within the uterine lining. And also, you know, they used it really like if there was a worm infestation or something, it really was to release a lot of that out of your body. Mentioned it's something almost like you know, anybody who experiences microdosing, you're going to use it for a very short amount of time, a very small amount of it if you are ingesting it. And I wouldn't recommend ingesting like an essential oil of any type, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Definitely. And I put that on this post and in the episode, I was very clear. Like, I actually, one of my teas, my dream blend, actually has mugwort in it. And of course, it comprises a small part of the rest of the herbs in that blend. But I said, you know, you have to be careful. You don't want to drink this every night. You don't want to make it very strong. You don't want to drink it if you're pregnant, want to be pregnant, any of those things. So I wanted to be very careful about that as well. But like I said, in the kind of more romantic sense, it really is an herb that was used for kind of, you know, like feminist power because it was one of the only choices that women had. And part of herbal witchery, what I've discovered is that those midwives and those kind of cunning folk, I guess, is what they were called. Those were the people that had all these herbal remedies. And so that's who you'd go to as a common person. Back in the day, you'd go to your village cunning folk and they would prescribe you this, like for things like worms. You would take a tincture or something like that to get rid of even something like worms. So it's really interesting in that way.
So question, would that be, if it was something for worms and stuff, would that be part of an antifungal property that it had? How would it help in that regard? It was just like a flush, as you guys were talking about?
As far as I understand, I didn't look too much into that, like as far as like medicinally, but it's a very, very bitter herb. I think its relative is wormwood, which is in absinthe, and that's even more bitter. Mm. But mugwort is one of the most bitter herbs out there. And so I think that has something to do with it. And then those chemicals in it, there's like camphor in it, there's thujone in it. So there's a couple different chemicals that actually, yeah, would flush out the body and
how bitter it is. And when we talk about like herbalism and you get into the phytochemistry of it, you know, anybody can kind of be a chemist in that way when they're looking at herbs just by senses like taste or smell. And so bitter usually equals astringent, and then astringent things are usually for like healing or disinfectant, you know. And so you can easily start to associate the tastes and smells of certain herbs with some of their medicinal qualities.
Well, that actually works then for the little bit of information I have from the fitness perspective, because, you know, not every one of our episodes is going to be revolved largely, you know, equally between both interests that we have, herbalism and fitness. But I was able to find a little bit of information. And since mugwort, I guess, has some type of antifungal property, I was reading that it's actually really good for athlete's foot. And that may be something that people who are working out struggle with, especially maybe if they live in warmer climates, because they like warm, moist, like dark areas to feed off of. And it could be put into a foot bath, actually, I guess, to help alleviate the symptoms, which is important, because if they get too intense, they could develop cracks and blisters, which then could develop further infection. And kind of to tie it all together, a little bit lavender to what you do with your history, is that I read that Romans did put them in their sandals and it helped relieve fatigue and foot pain. And in Ayurvedic medicine, it was used as a wash for fungal infections, which kind of then plays into its ability to be used for athlete's foot. So at the end of the day, it all seems to be able to tie together, which is always really cool when that happens.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I was sitting here thinking, like, I hope she talks about the Roman soldiers. So when I was doing my research, it definitely said, like, Roman soldiers, so they would be marching for miles and miles and miles, and they would put mugwort, which grows, like, on, I guess, the sides of creeks and along roadways. Mm. It's kind of a weed, actually. So it would be very available. They would pick it, and they'd put it in their footwear, and it was, like, said, there was, like, a saying, a traveler could walk more than 40 miles with mugwort and not feel tired. And then I butchered this because I do not speak German, but in Germany, the herb mugwort is actually called Beifoot, which means by foot. So it really ties in there.
Oh.
So Lavender, you said you had like a poem and some other things that you normally do for this. Do you have one for mugwort?
Yeah, so mugwort's was really, I like this one a lot. Okay, now you got me here, because I'm gonna say this again. It's actually a popular rhyme of Scotland, and so it's actually written in the Scottish dialect, kind of like Tam O'Shanter, if you're familiar with that poem. Mm. So it sounds a little weird, because I'm not going to try it in a Scottish accent, but it says, if they would drink nettles in March and eat muggins, mugwort, in May, say mani brawn young maidens would not be gang to clay. So to make that make sense, basically, it's this mermaid apparently watching this procession of these young girls who have died of consumption or something like that. And she's watching and she says, if they would have drank nettles in March and ate mugwort in May, so many brave young maidens wouldn't be going to clay, which would be dead.
Oh, wow.
It's very folklorish, I guess.
I think chamomile was one that you were maybe thinking about talking about. And I think chamomile, even for someone who is not well-versed in herbs, they may not even fully realize that they are participating in herbal medicine by drinking chamomile tea or, you know, having it in a balm or something like that. So what brought chamomile to your attention as a special herb for people to pay attention to?
I think definitely it's the tea. Chamomile, like, I didn't know this, but chamomile tea is actually, like, I think it's qualified as the most drunk tea in the world. I mean, it's by far, like, the most consumed tea. And it's just such a bright, sunny herb, and it was one of the first herbs, like, before I really got into drinking tea or anything like that. I had ordered it to make, like, an at-home, like, lip balm product. And so I got this huge bag of it, and I'd never even smelled it before, and it just smelled so wonderful and sweet. And I think that's why, like, that was just one of the first ones that I did, because it was one of the first herbs that I really kind of fell in love with.
Nice. I love it. It's one of my favorites as well. And Paula, do you grow any chamomile on your property?
Yeah, a majority of the things I use within my teas are grown on my property. We're setting up the greenhouse next year to actually grow the tea leaves themselves. So if you check out my herbal teas on botanicallycurious.com, you'll see that I have like chamomile and red clover and all of these things that are really easy to grow where we live. And that's kind of, you know, those started growing first and I started using those. And that's kind of how I got into selling them online, because I had such an abundance, especially red clover. That stuff just grows like crazy where we're at. And, you know, we actually have red clay here. And so I was really surprised that we were able to grow anything, but I persisted. And so, yeah, that's a good one to grow. And it looks great. And anything that bees are attracted to, you know, anything you can put into a pollinator garden, I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, they are really beautiful. And I guess when you grow them, because I tried growing them and I tried harvesting it a little bit. I didn't have much space at the time, but you just kind of put your fingers through the tops, right? And just gently take the flower heads off of it. Is that correct? Or is there another way that you could harvest it?
So I actually go through, because I kind of want to keep it intact as much as possible, I go through and I just cut like an inch below the flower. And then after I dry them, you can separate. You know, it's not going to hurt anything to have a little bit of stem on there. But that's usually how I go through and do it.
Oh, nice. Nice. So what ancient ways did people of this earth use chamomile before our time, before the luxury of just a tea bag?
Well, before I get into that, I do want to, like, geek out for a second over the name, because it's been a little while since I did chamomile. I think I did it in the summer. And I just want to say that its name comes from the Greek for earth apple. And, yeah, it's chamai and melon. And so chamai melon, it kind of, like, merged into that. And it's because they smell so sweet. And that's kind of where they got their name. So I like that.
So the interesting thing about chamomile, and, you know, you mentioned like that apple and the name, that I think it was actually on your podcast, I might have listened to this, but, you know, during ancient times and when they reference apple in the Bible, it's actually just reference to fruit. Like, apple was used for the general name of just any fruit.
I loved that episode because I was like, whoa, I had no idea. It makes so much more sense why there's all this controversy over, like, you know, if, well, I guess you don't have to be Christian, but, like, just for that story, Genesis, with the apple is supposed to be this, like, emblem of sin and everything, but it might not have even been an apple because there was so much confusion over that specific word. It was used so broadly.
Oh my God, mind blown.
Yes. Yep.
So up much until, art. I think, yeah. So much, I mean, imagine it was just a banana or something. The forbidden banana.
Or some people have even said a mushroom. So, like, yeah, it's not the same.
You know, that would have, the mushroom actually could have made some sense.
As far as what it was used for, it's kind of the same thing, I think, as a lot of us would use it for today. It was definitely used, like, in teas for calmness. It was given before bedtime. And I think that's kind of the round the world reason for drinking chamomile, right? It's like this calms you down before you go to sleep. But it was also used in compresses to treat burns, diaper rash, eye infections, like dry nipples for breastfeeding mothers, whole bunch of different things. I think it was just used like in all manner of ways, like on things that needed gentle healing energy, mm-hmm. I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. So I love that because the energetic property is really cooling and calming in some respects. And then when we talk about energetic, sometimes it can be confusing for some people because it's got a cooling aspect to the mind, but then more of a warming aspect to kind of the gut. And so, you know, teas are really great for digestion and kind of easing cramps and things like that. And, you know, interestingly, it is a great source of like vitamin B12, which is hard for people to get into their diets, vitamin D, vitamin E. So it's really great for skin. You know, I use it in teas all the time for skin or like a bath soak. And magnesium, copper, zinc. So when we think about herbs and we think about things that are as simple as chamomile, you don't usually associate it with all of these different properties and vitamins and everything, but it's really great for just whole health.
Came up with lavender for our bath, right? Like, we came up with that scent, but we didn't. Like, the Romans were using it in their baths like thousands of years ago. Chamomile was used to lighten hair thousands of years ago, and people still do that today. So I think it's just really interesting how we think that we've come up with these things, I feel like, but we haven't. It goes back so far. And it's awesome to get in touch with herbs, and that's why I like what, you know, you do, Paula, because it's getting in touch with herbs and using it. It's a natural way to kind of help our bodies.
Right. So.
Yeah. I also love how, you know, you mentioned how we assume that maybe it wasn't too long ago that we discovered lavender and we created all of those scents and or those colors or whatever the case is, when it did come to us naturally, and it does have those magical properties. And it is cool to think that, you know, even if it's something as simple as steeping the flowers or the leaves to make tea, it seems like such a simple act for us to do today. But to feel connected to that simple act of someone doing the same exact thing thousands of years ago is actually such a beautiful thing, the way that plants and I think nature kind of brings everything full circle. Even though people think they're completely disconnected from it, we aren't. We're not disconnected from the earth or from the history or from the people who have passed through this earth. And I just love that it could all come full circle. And even with athletes, I mean, like, we talked about chamomile being good for anxiety. When you have anxiety or when you have a lot of stress, you create a lot of tension in your body. So even when it's something as releasing muscle tension, I mean, that helps with recovery, and that helps with not having that tightness to our muscles that we get not just from working out, but just from the anxiety of day-to-day life. So to be able to have an herb that's so gentle on the body, but so powerful at the same time is a blessing.
Yeah. And the other aspect is, you know, we talked about lavender and chamomile a little bit. They actually are both associated with calming, and they both have a chemical component, apigenin, which I'm probably butchering that as well, but it binds the specific receptors in your brain that actually decrease anxiety and initiate sleep. And so sometimes when you're doing herbal remedies and you might have a few herbs on hand and you're like, oh gosh, I'm out of one, what can I use to substitute? You know, sometimes chamomile and lavender can be interchangeable in that way, and you can use one or the other as a substitute if you're looking for that type of relief, whether it's anxiety or sleep.
If you think about it, the ancient people did not know what apigenia was. They couldn't do chemical tests. But they knew that these herbs could have these effects on you. And that's just what I love about researching and getting in touch with the herbs the way that I do when I do this research, because a lot of them, they knew, like cloves, they used to use cloves for like pain in the mouth. And a lot of the like topical things that we have today actually has like concentrated clove oil in it. So I just think it's, and like, I was thinking a minute ago, I don't remember what jogged my memory, but like toothpaste. Oh, I think it was like when you said that, or when I said, and then you agreed that we think we came up with something like toothpaste, right? Mm-hmm. We think it's a purely modern thing, but people were doing that with mint leaves and other kinds of herbs for centuries. People cared about their breath back then. So I just, again, I just think it's amazing.
Yeah, especially because I, you know, we go into these things knowing what a lot of the time, especially when it comes to something like drinking tea, we buy tea knowing the specific outcome that's supposed to come of it. So we go into it being like, okay, I know lavender's calming. I know chamomile's calming for this. But for people in the past to, I don't know, it just feels different to not have any pretense to what you're supposed to be experiencing with these herbs. And then to just discover it through practice. And, you know, I think that's maybe the cool thing about herbalism today, too. And when you start experimenting with herbs that you're not super familiar with, you're going into it kind of as this blank canvas, just like people did so very long ago, which is so neat.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Lavender, did you have another poem for this one and maybe even a recipe for chamomile?
Yes. Well, this is a good one. This poem, it's hilarious, I think. So it says, if you pronounce it chamomile, that your Yankeeness will reveal. For Brits assume it more worthwhile to render it as chamomile. So wear a wreath of chamomile to make your beauty sweeter still. Some tea with chamomile to have your lunch in British style. Because... British people with British accent, they say chamomile, if you ever heard it. And it's like, as an American, I'm like, that doesn't sound right, but it's just because we pronounce it different. And then the recipe I had chosen for this one was actually chamomile honey pancakes. And so if you go to that episode, I'm not sure what number it was, but I label them just by the actual herbs. So if you go to the Herbal Witchery episode for chamomile, you can find a link. But it basically includes a chamomile tea. You brew it really strongly and you use that in the batter. And then you also infuse the honey with chamomile. And so it's got that very light, sweet chamomile flavor in the pancakes and in the honey that you would use on top.
I love that. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. I want that right now, actually. I think I will do that this weekend.
Let me know how they turn out.
Thyme was... one of the herbs that you were looking at a little bit earlier. So let's delve right into thyme.
It's one of the herbs that I did grow in like an herb garden that I did. And I say like on my first episode of Herbal Witchery, I am not an herbalist and I don't always have like a garden full of beautiful things like it sounds that you do. But I did grow some and 1 year, and one of them was a lemon thyme. And it was the most like sweet smelling beautiful thing ever. And so when I was researching thyme, it didn't surprise me, but it was really awesome to find out that it's associated with fairies. It has some folklore with fairies, which we could talk a whole nother level about fairies and whether they're nice or mean, but I guess today we think of fairies as really nice and sweet, right? So it has that kind of an energy. And then the other thing was, and we talked a little bit about Roman soldiers, and this actually kind of speaks to Roman soldiers and the soldiers in the crusade in Europe. And thyme actually was really representative of courage. And so it was actually given to soldiers before they went off to battle as courage, or like, you know, kind of like, here, go off to battle with this strength, right? And then it actually was also used in bandages and things like that. They were soaked in thyme because it does have an antiseptic property as well. I believe the chemical is called thymol. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. So again, we see this really gentle, sweet herb that we don't think much of, but it has this really beautiful history, and it's actually helped heal people. So,
well, most recently, Danielle actually was using thyme in a steam that I had recommended.
And oh, yes.
It sounded like it worked out pretty well. And it's so interesting, you know, like thyme's got a lot of vitamin C and vitamin A in it. And usually it's actually like the energetic properties are a lot warmer and drying. And so it can help break up like cold, stagnant conditions. And usually like in herbalism, if you're looking, you usually look at someone's tongue a lot of the time to see some of the health conditions that they might be dealing with. And so if you have like a thick white coating on your tongue, that could indicate that there's some coldness and some stagnation. And so just doing like a steam of thyme, where you either steep it in a cup or in a pot and then put, you know, like a towel over your head and kind of just breathe that in, it's really great. And then like antimicrobial properties allowed to just go into the lungs and just heal up whatever might be in there, which is really nice. And so if you've got a cold coming on, you know, great. And then just like chamomile, it actually has some of the same properties to help strengthen the connections between the brain cells. So, you know, improving your brain function and all of those things as you age.
The thyme steam sounds amazing.
it was amazing. I got sick around Thanksgiving, COVID negative, just to be clear, but it was just a regular old seasonal cold, but I had so much congestion in my chest, and Paula just kept listening to me, and she's the one who suggested it, and it felt so good. It cleared things up, and it was something that I felt like I was able to repeat, you know, at various points throughout the day. It wasn't something I was worried about doing or overdoing. So for someone like me who is new to herbalism and kind of gets scared by the dosing of things and overdoing things, it was nice to kind of have that comfort in going into it and being able to use it really confidently. And I used it around my family too, who doesn't always use herbs, so I was hoping they picked up on a couple cues. Are you gonna say something?
Sorry. Oh, I was gonna have Lavender Moon just do her poem for this one and maybe a recipe if she had one, so that way we can make sure to get that in.
Sure. This one's a little bit longer, so hopefully people stick with it. It is from The Merry Adventures of Robin Hood by Howard Pyle. And it says, in front of them, over beyond the hedge, the dusty road stretched away across the plain. Behind them, the meadowlands and bright green fields of tender young corn lay broadly in the sun. And overhead spread the shade of the cool, rustling leaves of the beechen tree. Pleasantly to their nostrils came the tender fragrance of the purple violets and wild thyme that grew within the dewy moisture of the edge of the little fountain, and pleasantly came the soft gurgle of the water. All was so pleasant and so full of the gentle joy of the bright Maytime that for a long time no one of three cared to speak, but each lay on his back gazing up through the trembling leaves of the trees to the bright sky overhead. I just thought, when I read that, I was like, that is so beautiful. And like, it just makes me think of thyme, like the gentleness, the beautiful smell, like it just paints this beautiful picture, right? The big, like, you know, strong, merry men just relaxing, sniffing some thyme. So, and then for the recipe for that one, I chose quick lemon thyme chicken. And I chose this one just, I think I explained it on my episode. I usually look around quite a bit, but when I typed like thyme recipes into Google, like the first 15 were lemon thyme chicken. So I was like, okay, this combo obviously goes really well together. So it's just a really simple recipe with thyme as the star. And it, again, like there's some citrus thyme varieties, and I think that would be beautiful with the citrus in this. And so, yeah, that's what I chose for that. And again, if you go to my thyme episode, and I put the links for all the recipes in there, so you can go to the blog that it's from to get the actual recipe.
Awesome.
Well, I think that's, you know, I think that's great. You kind of laughed when you just said it was just kind of like a lemon chicken thyme recipe opposed to, you know, like a tincture or a concoction that you think of. But I mean, that is like, I say it over and over again, just because it resonates so true with someone who's new to herbalism. But I think when you could use it in that application, and the application that maybe you're accustomed to or maybe feels comfortable, it doesn't feel as daunting. So for us to use it in just a regular culinary recipe, and then maybe eating it, knowing what the, you know, what the properties are of it, you kind of eat it with more intention, I think. And then it could kind of activate, I think.
That's a great point. And I do always do or try to focus on a recipe that people can make easily, because of, I think of that reason. Because I myself, like I said, like, I mean, I don't always use these herbs like, ooh, I'm doing magic and I'm going to do a spell and here's my herbs. Like most of my stuff is in the kitchen, right? But it can backfire. Let me explain, because I don't know if you've listened to my cinnamon episode or my nutmeg episode, but those had to do with the spice wars, and there was like some horrible massacres and like decimation of populations during the spice wars. And so now whenever I put cinnamon on something, I kind of like, I'm thinking about that history. So I think it's important that we know it, but it can also kind of backfire, because like thyme is like, ooh, beautiful history, right? But then some of them are a little bit darker. So,
well, maybe it could give or yield maybe more appreciation when you do use it, or even more like intention or consideration when you use it. Because I was just reading up on something, and it actually could kind of relate to what we're talking about. But herbs and athletes, like you hear maca as a superfood, and it's kind of become this like trigger, and it's become so commercialized. It's depleting the resources of it, and people aren't taking that into consideration. So even though cinnamon is something that maybe people find everywhere, just knowing the history of it can give them a little more thought behind when they use it and why they use it, and maybe how often they use it even.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I just did my episode, I think I'm releasing it this Wednesday, on sage. And if you're in kind of the new age community, you probably know the controversy, but maybe not. But people have been burning sage, but they've actually been burning white sage and calling it smudging. And there's this whole conversation about cultural appropriation. And it's again, ruining the native white sage growth in the area that it's native to. So that's a good point, because the more we know about a herb and where it grows and its history, the more we can appreciate it and not do things like that.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You also have a tarot-focused podcast as well, correct?
I do. I have a podcast called Tea and Tarot with Lavender Moon. But then I started doing this Learn Tarot with Harry Potter. And I had this, like, really kind of, epiphany, where I was like going through the tarot deck and I was like, oh my gosh, like these line up with Harry Potter characters. It's in some ways, it's almost as if the author like was looking at a tarot deck when she was writing. It's really kind of crazy. So anyways, I have quite a few of those episodes out. But again, I really need to like get back to that, because a lot of people did like it and I love doing it as well. So it's out there. It's not quite as developed as herbal witchery though.
So I wanted to kind of take the time to talk about tarot a little bit, because like you mentioned, it was interesting if the tarot deck you were looking at had some characteristics of like characters in a book. And so the reason I really love it is if you look at psychology and like archetypes and all of these things, there's almost a similarity in that every card has its own like character or property to it. And so when you're doing tarot, like we do the botanical oracle cards, and it's just a way to kind of center and theme things in terms of, you know, today was service and volunteering and all those. But it's a reflection tool that I think is, you know, utilized more in our community, but should be just utilized. You don't have to be a pagan. You don't have to be in like the witchy community or anything to use it, because, well, Danielle has a tarot deck she just got recently. And, you know, I personally think it's a great way to just, you know, pull a card or maybe three cards for the day, see what the representation is for that and how you kind of receive that message and then why you receive it in that way. So you're really getting to the psychology, and it says a lot about who you are. And so, you know, getting into the new year, and if you want to be a little more, you know, do a little more self-actualization, you know, that's a great tool. And it's also fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that a lot of people, especially if they haven't done tarot before, they get a little overwhelmed. They'll get the deck and then they're like, I have to memorize all these meanings. And then when you start digging into it, a lot of the people that teach it are like, no, you really just need to trust your gut. And I think that goes exactly with what you're saying. Because first of all, there are so many decks out there and their artwork is beautiful. And the artwork has just as much meaning as like, this is a Six of Wands and it has this specific meaning, right? Mm. And I think what you just said, it's like you can look at a combination of cards and a message will pop out to you. And I don't mean that in like a woo-woo sense, like something, you know, but I just mean like you might see a theme and you might be like, oh my gosh, that's going on in my life right now. And then if you look a little deeper, you might see, okay, well, it seems like I need to watch out for this aspect of my personality or this kind of theme in my life. Balance is usually one that's in the cards. But I think it's a great tool. I don't think it tells the future necessarily, but I think it helps us sort through kind of like dreams. It kind of reflects back to us what we need to know, as long as we're kind of open to like looking at things in a non-logical way and a more artistic way, I guess.
Right.
Every time Paul and I pull one of the botanical oracle cards, I mean, I guess we are maybe pulling meaning from them as well. I'm sure that's happening, but they always seem to relate so well to the person that we're talking with or the topic that we're talking about. And these are pulled at random that day, moments before the podcast starts. There's, you know, we're not searching through the deck to find a plant that relates to our discussion. And I think the same's with tarot. You know, sometimes things just show up for you in different signs and in different messages. And it's just, it's kind of like being open to, it's kind of being open to the magic of it all, I guess. At least
that's I would agree. And I think I shared this on, I don't remember which episode it was, but I had shared this example. Like, I asked a specific question, like, should I ask this person, yes, are we doing this or no, are we not? And my card was the Hanged Man. And I looked it up in the book that went with that. And it was like point blank, like, this is the time to wait. Don't ask questions. Like, you just need to be still. And like, so yeah, like that was definitely one of the times where I was like, okay, that's an answer. like that very much fits. So I agree. Like when those quote magical moments happen, it's really awesome. So
thank you for everything. And is there other than your podcast, is there any special projects you have coming up? Like any new tea blends that people can be on the lookout for? Or just anything you'd like people to know about? And where can they find you if they wanted to look up your stuff?
So I have a blog, and it's basically, it mirrors what I do on the podcast. It's just kind of a written version. And that's lavendermoonteas.com. Then I have, of course, the podcast, which is Poetry, and then the tarot one that I'm going to get back to is Tea and Tarot with Lavender Moon. And then I have the Enchanted Herbal Tea line. And so that's on Etsy, and the store name is just Lavender Moon Teas. And I'll just explain what it is quick, because it is different than Paula's, which is like medicinal like uses. My tea is not medicinal. So what I've done is like I'm talking about, if you look up for, you're wanting to do a prosperity spell or a love spell or something like that, you're going to have to probably look up and you're going to get this list of herbs. You're going to get chamomile, rose, basil. You're going to get all these different things. And then if you don't have one of them, you're going to be like, oh, I need to go to the store or wherever and get this. And so what I did was I was like, you know what? I'm going to make some teas that taste really great, but also combine the herbs that have those properties, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I have prosperity blend, has chamomile and ginger and green tea and a few other things. I have the dream one I mentioned that has valerian root, which is like chemically, they actually sell like supplements of that help you go to sleep. That has mugwort because it does have this connotation for helping dreams make them more vivid. It has marshmallow root, which kind of mellows everything out. It has elderberries, which are like known for protection. And this is like, again, I don't want to say like, ooh, magical, but these, if you believe in these energies and you practice, then I combine these herbs for this purpose. You would use them, or you can just use it as a tea and like tap into those energies. So anyways, that is kind of what my teas are. And I get really good feedback on them. I do work on like just the taste as well. Like I don't just throw herbs together like, oh, these have these properties. Like I do blend them so that they taste good as well. But again, that's on Etsy at Lavender Moon Teas.
Yeah, we'll have all these links in the information in the podcast description. And then if for any reason, you know, you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh man, they didn't get in depth about this one thing always go to our Instagram, because our Instagram will have more information, more in-depth on something that we maybe didn't get to within the podcast. So check out the Instagram at Bands and Botanicals. Anytime, reach out to us. We love the questions. We're going to be doing an episode on adaptogens and doing some more about herbal energetics soon. And I've got some questions from some of you out there. So keep the questions coming, because they make for great episodes.
Yeah, and keep a lookout, because even though we didn't get too much into it, just because Lavender Moon does focus on kind of like the history behind all of the herbs and stuff, I tried to bring some form of fitness into it. So I actually looked up kind of fitness routines that ancient gladiators and people used back in the day in order to prepare themselves for their fights or for their training, whatever it is. And I threw together a workout based on the research that I found. So if you want to keep an eye out on our Patreon or on our Instagram with this episode, there's going to be a little fun kind of tap into your ancient selves gladiator workout to just play with the idea of the past kind of connecting with all of these herbs.
Nice.
I love it.
Keep a lookout for that too, Lavender. You can do some of the workouts.
I will.
Well, thank you everyone so much for listening. Thank you, Lavender, for being a part of this. Obviously, Paula, thank you for all of your wealth of information, and peace and love, everybody. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.